Welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham Business Podcasts are hosted by Dr. Duff Watkins. Duff is the director of ExecSearch International, an author, and is also on the AmCham Council of Governors. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hello and welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham, bringing business to you. Our topic today is innovation. What it is and what it isn't. Today we learn how to keep it clever. You'll hear about the boom in ideas that's sweeping the world and, hey, are you part of it or not? We'll answer the question, when is the best time to plant an oak tree? My name is Duff Watkins. I'm your host on the AmCham Business Podcast. Today our guest is Brad Ferber of the Innovation Center of the University of New South Wales. Let's begin. Brad, first of all, what is an innovation center?
Well, Innovation Center is a term that a lot of different companies and organizations and universities use. So it can be, I think, pretty much what you want it to be. In our case, the Innovation Center at the University of New South Wales, it's a place, it's a physical place and a digital platform where we want to inspire curiosity. And we are professionally staffed, so we have all sorts of facilities and know-how so that if somebody enters our center with an idea, we can help them, quote, find a better way. And that may mean that they are inspired and informed through some of the workshops, or they participate in, say, different kinds of innovation challenges or tournaments. It may be that we connect them to others that will help them, you know, in the modern age. You know, an engineer alone may know how to build something, but they may not know what to build. Or a marketing person may have a brilliant idea, but they don't know how to build it. Or even if they do know how to build it, it needs to be sort of an Apple-like experience, and so they may need design help. And so what the Innovation Center is, it's a hub to what we say is inspire people to find a better way.
You have this saying at the Innovation Center that everyone is an innovator. What do you folks mean by that?
Yeah, so that was one where when we first started saying it, you know, people were uncomfortable in some respects because they think, oh, geez, innovators are guys like Thomas Edison or Nikola Tesla or something like that. It's not what I do. The original catalyst for our center is a guy named Michael Crouch, and he's quite comfortable saying that everyone is an innovator. And now that I've been working at the center for about a year and a half, I'm also quite confident saying that all humans are unique and all humans are capable of using their intelligence to find a better way. So if you're living up in the red center of Australia and it's a desert and you need to figure out how you're going to survive, you will need to innovate. And likewise, innovation can happen, you know, in small steps, small improvements, or it can be disruptive or transformational. So that's what innovation is.
Australia likes to call itself the clever country, and we'd like to keep it clever if possible. I'm intrigued by some of the stats you were talking about. Evidently, the university research can generate ideas that are estimated to contribute $160 billion to the economy. That's 10% of the GDP. That reminds me of a famous quotation by a former president of Harvard. If you think education is expensive, try ignorance. That's where the real cost occurs if you don't know stuff. So you're talking about, so there is a real contribution to business. There's this two-way connection with business and innovation.
Is there a question specifically?
Well, or? Yeah, can you elaborate on that? What is the two-way connection that you folks are doing at the Innovation Center?
Okay, so at the Michael Crouch Innovation Center, we like to say that we're UNSW-enabled, but we're powered by the community. So we're trying to engage with industry and government, bringing them on campus to help us create the challenges, explain, you know, what it is that they're doing, what it is that they need, because those are real world problems. And then our students and others who we can bring to the table will wrestle with those problems collectively. And what we're trying to create essentially is a new kind of model. So we've got discussions with lots of different companies where they know they need to hire, quote, future-ready students. And those students need to have the right mindset. They need to have the right skills. And they need, frankly, to have some meaningful experience where hopefully they can hit the ground running. And so what we're trying to create is an opportunity for the university to engage with industry and with government, because government is a major stakeholder here. Yeah, so we're not just coming up with these on our own. I guess the other thing I would say is for the staff of the MCIC, or the center where I work, we like to say, we don't need to be the geniuses, we need to be the genius makers. And the way you do that is to inspire curiosity and provide opportunities for serendipity, where, you know, people, you never know who you're going to meet. And it's amazing, frankly, what has already occurred in the short time that we've been open in terms of people meeting people and finding opportunities.
One of the points that you make is that innovation is sometimes too narrowly defined. In other words, people say, oh, I'm not an entrepreneur, I'm not that clever, I'm not that, I can't think of new things all the time. And you say that's one of the problems, and one of the things which, as I understand it, the center is trying to do is to cultivate an innovation mindset. How do you do that?
Well, so if you start every day with the question, is there a better way, then you can start to challenge the status quo. And so when people say, hey, this is just how we do it, you know, we're hoping people would say, well, why do we do it that way? You know, maybe we should do it a better way or a more efficient way. So if you start with the question, is there a better way? It doesn't matter if you're working for a startup or if you're working for the government. If there's a better way to deliver whatever it is that you're doing, the bane of my existence is credit card reconciliation. I constantly ask the question, is there a better way? You know, can't somebody come up with a more efficient way than what we do? And that can be innovative. So obviously, if you're dealing with something like quantum computing, I mean, that's massive. That's transformational innovation, and that's great. But it doesn't have to be hard science for it to be innovative.
Why is innovation such a hot topic internationally? Sitting in that very chair where you are now, I've interviewed the U.S. ambassador to Australia. He is a hardcore proponent of innovation. Every business person I speak to, the topic, the word of innovation will arise. It is a topic that is hot, not just in Australia, but all around the world. My question to you is, why now? What makes it such a prominent issue?
I think there's a realization that countries and organizations that are innovative are the ones that will provide the jobs of the future. And so you either innovate or you die. And so in a world where, you know, in some cases you do incremental improvement where you're basically trying to squeeze more juice out of a lemon, that's great and you can keep trying to do that. But the bigger opportunity is to create an entirely new thing. The jobs of the future, many of them, they don't even exist yet. And the wealth creation for nations is going to come from innovation. I mean, yeah, it may still be true that some nations have natural resources that they will be able to exploit and sell. That's probably not going away. But better than that is, you know, creation of knowledge workers, and that requires innovation.
So it's not just a business issue. This is actually, it affects the fate of the nation, which is why the government is so behind the idea of innovation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the Silicon Valley, the amount of wealth that has been created and the requirement for what are those companies looking for? You know, they're looking for really smart, creative people who can create new value where none existed previously. And so that requires innovation, that requires educated people who are not afraid to constantly ask the question, is there a better way?
I know that you recently returned from the U.S. I'm curious, how does what we're doing in Australia, what you're doing at the Innovation Center, how does it compare with some of the work that's being done in the U.S., specifically the U.S. universities?
That's a great question. And that was a fantastic trip, by the way, the AmCham Innovation Mission. As part of that, we did, in addition to visiting leading innovative companies in San Diego and San Francisco, we visited, as part of the mission, UCSD in San Diego and Stanford. And then I further went to some of the other leaders in the U.S. or North America. So I visited Harvard and MIT, University of Toronto, University of Washington. Those universities are ranked by Thomson Reuters as among the most innovative universities. And I think the takeaway is, you know, there's lots of different ways for universities to design this. In some cases, it's just bottoms up, where things that have happened sprouted under the initiative of somebody under a school or a faculty, and then they've just grown and grown and they've become successful, not so much because of what the university did, but because you had really talented individuals who grew that from the bottom up. There is increasingly, I think, a desire by universities to engage across all faculties. And in order to do that, it's easier to do it from the top down. So some of the universities, like UNSW is now doing with our center, have said, we're gonna position this sort of above the faculties in the sense that it cuts across all faculties, and by the way, all the divisions. And that way you can create cross-pollination much easier because, quote, no one faculty or school owns it. It's a university asset that's co-owned and co-designed by the entire university. I would say after, you know, meeting with these people at those universities, what I heard was they have the same challenges, they have the same opportunities, and frankly, they have a lot of the same frustrations, which was a little surprising to me because, you know, if you're in the top five most innovative in the world, you'd sort of think, they're way ahead. I think part of the reason those universities have been successful is because they just have really talented people, and they have had really talented people for a long time. And so if you're fortunate enough to grow up in a rainforest with a lot of trees and plants that are reaching for sunlight, you're going to have a very rich and diverse ecosystem. And in the case of some of these places, they're successful not just because of what they do, but because they're part of a very rich ecosystem.
You mentioned the ecosystem. I know that a tropical forest is a highly competitive environment. It was described to me as by one biologist as essentially a war zone where all the plants are competing for the sunlight because that's sort of the revenue that drives everything for them. Now, how do they rank universities as being most innovative, which, by the way, is an indication of how competitive innovation has come to be?
Well, I'm just referring to, I think it's a Thomson Reuters survey, and I'm not an expert exactly at what they looked at, but my understanding is they look at economic impact. They look at, you know, things like people who are employed by or are alumni of certain universities, you know, what has been the total economic impact of that. And so the universities are a big part of the ecosystem because it's within the universities that the talent is trained. The universities are also doing, you know, hard research, you know, that may not be commercializable, you know, so it's not a lot, most of the knowledge within these universities doesn't directly translate into something that can be commercialized, but doesn't mean it doesn't have value. It may become part of the public good, and based, it's the foundation upon which other things can be built. So as far as I can tell, they've looked at whatever factors Thomson Reuters thinks are appropriate, but intellectual property, patents, economic impact.
Let's go back to the forest for a second and answer the question, when is the best time to plant an oak tree? You're describing innovation as a process that needs to be nurtured, and that means time. How much time? You sent me a quotation by Bill Gates who said most people overestimate what can be accomplished in 2 years and they underestimate what can be accomplished in 10 years. So we have to plant and nurture and harvest, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. I do like that quote. In terms of, you know, another quote that I mentioned is the best time to plant an oak tree was 100 years ago, right? And so in some respects, these universities that we talked about, they planted those oak trees a long time ago, and now they're bearing, you know, the fruits of that. If you just get it back to the rainforest, if you clear cut a rainforest and then you allow the new growth to take root, there are certain species that will immediately prosper, and they would be the first generation, and it's under that first generation that some of the larger trees can be germinated and grow. So that second generation could, in fact, be the breakthrough. So the first generation, it's important that you've got a lot of seeds, you've got a lot of activity, you've got a lot of things happening, but it may be that second generation that leads to the breakthrough economic growth.
And we have certain advantages here in Australia, from what I gather. Can you tell us what they are? What I'm really wondering is what sort of things, what are the basic requirements that a country or business or university needs in order to innovate? There must be some basic ingredients required.
Well, if we just step back and look at Australia, being American, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, the United States, at least relative to Europe, is a young nation. But Australia, even compared to the United States, is an even younger nation. And this is a nation that's got 24 million people as of a couple of weeks ago. What's interesting, among that 24 million, I think it's 28% of Australians were born outside of Australia. Mm-hmm. Australia has the benefit of being, you know, a country that has fantastic infrastructure. It's a first world country with great universities. Australia, I think, leads the world in terms of its ability to attract international students. So we're getting a lot of students coming from, you know, the world's fastest growing markets, so China and India. And so here you have Australia sitting right in the middle of, you know, Asia Pacific. And if you just look at the shifts that are occurring, I mean, it's no secret that the balance of power is shifting from the West to Asia. And Australia has, in my view, a strategic advantage relative to either the United States or Europe in that Asia views Australia as part of Asia, or at least, and so they, I think the Chinese trust Australians, and I think the Americans and the Europeans trust Australians. And so in a way, there's a gatekeeper role here in Australia, and Australia has the ability, if they make smart decisions, to really prosper if they can hold on to the talent and figure out how to become an innovation nation as opposed to, you know, just exploiting natural resources.
What I'm hearing from you, Brad, is that cross-pollination and collaboration seems to be one of the keys, not just building silos and residing in them, but actually actively seeking input from others, diverse perspectives, varied inputs. That seems to be one of the necessary ingredients for innovation.
Yeah, absolutely. There is maybe this myth of the evil genius sitting in a dungeon who's innovating. That really doesn't hold water when you look at it. So Walter Isaacson, who published a book about a year or so ago, it's a great book, particularly focused on innovation within the computer industry and the digital space. All of the breakthrough innovations were team efforts. Mm-hmm. You know, so even if you look at the movie, I think it was called The Imitation Game, where Alan Turing is the supposed lone genius. You know, if you really look at it, Alan Turing, even in the movie, the breakthrough occurred when they went to the bar and he started talking to a woman who was communicating with the Germans through code. That was when the breakthrough happened. It wasn't when he was sitting in the lab. He got out and he started talking to other people, and there was a team. The team is, over and over again, you have to have a team, and the team has to have different perspectives, and that's when innovation happens. It happens at the edge.
If innovation were easy and commonplace, I suppose we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation. It's something that needs to be expedited. And when you went to the U.S., you said even those top innovative universities in the world were facing the same problems you are. In other words, it's difficult for them, it's difficult for you. So what are the barriers that prevent innovation from being as commonplace as we would like?
I would say the biggest barrier is mindset. And if you have people who, for whatever reason, are defending the status quo, and there's a lot of good reasons to defend it, maybe it works in your favor, maybe you're just so set in your ways, you know, maybe 20 years ago, you used to ask the question, is there a better way? And that enabled you to build your empire, whatever that may be. Now, you're comfortable, and now you're like defending it. And so somebody's going to come along who's younger, more aggressive, more curious, and they will disrupt you. And so the barriers are the mindset that you don't have to constantly be improving what you're doing and thinking of ways to cannibalize yourself. So if you just look at the companies, you know, that are willing to cannibalize themselves, those are the ones that are the most valuable companies on earth. I was very impressed with what I heard at General Electric. General Electric's been around a long time, and they've reinvented themselves several times. And what I heard on our trip was that they're going all in on the industrial internet, and it made perfect sense, right? But in order to do that, they have to accept that we're going to get out of certain businesses that we used to dominate, and we're going to go into this new area, and it may be that it doesn't work. So, you know, I mean, there's risk. You have to be willing to risk something. So a risk-taking mentality is important.
You don't achieve much in your comfort zone is something I was told that I remember. Plus, people tend to cling to things whether they work or don't work. Now, one of the things I've learned, we were talking off air earlier, we were talking basketball. You and I are veteran, aging basketball players, but we still got game. I just want the listeners to know that. Now, one of the things that struck me from our conversation is innovation occurs around us all the time. It's just that we might not see it. For example, we were talking about in basketball, innovations have occurred, are occurring, and further innovations will occur. Even in something as mundane as a commonplace sport that millions of people, men and women, girls and boys, play. Does that ring a bell for you, how commonplace innovation is if we just open our eyes to see it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the great coaches, the reason, John Wooden said, who's the best coach in America? And I think his reply was the one with the best players. And he was saying that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but obviously, you know, people...
They asked him, Coach Wooden, who's the best coach? Who's the coach that you fear the most? He said, the ones with the best players.
Right. And so that's right. I mean, talent is very important. But even so, you know, it's frequently the case that you get basketball teams that don't have the right chemistry. And so it's important that whatever it is, that your team has the right chemistry and that you complement one another in order for everybody to achieve the goal. And so if you're the coach or if you're the GM, the people who pick the players, the innovation is, okay, look, with this particular set of circumstances and this amount of resource and this talent, what is it that we can do in order to position ourselves for success? And that requires the coach each year and frankly, each game, to adjust and innovate. And if they do that, then the good coaches win more than the other coaches, you know, even if they don't have the best talent.
Using our definition of innovate as finding a better way. Okay, I'm a listener. I'm out there. I'm hearing you speak, and I'm wondering, how can I innovate today? What can I do today that will help me be more innovative than I was yesterday?
Well, what we like to say at the center, tongue-in-cheek, because it is our logo, is find a better way. But really, if every morning you ask yourself that question, you know, what could I do better today? What can I stop doing today? And what can I do more of? How can I help my organization or help my school or help, you know, even the government? You know, so sometimes when people ask for your feedback in surveys and the like, if you give them candid feedback, sometimes that helps those people innovate. And I guess that's all I would say is learning beats knowing. So the other way that I think people can stay current is to constantly be learning. And, you know, there's a lot of study that shows, and this is kind of interesting, I'm a big believer in Liz Wiseman's multiplier philosophy, which is a book she wrote 4 or 5 years ago, and then her subsequent work was one called The Rookie Advantage. And the rookie advantage is, it is true that sometimes people who are new to a role, so being a rookie doesn't mean you're a 22-year-old, mm-hmm. It means that you're new to a role. You can be a rookie as a 55-year-old, but people who are thrown into new challenges and accept the fact, hey, I'm a rookie, they ask a lot of questions. They don't pretend that they already have the answer. You know, they're not comfortable. They're trying to ask as many questions of as many people as possible, and then they distill that, and they can frequently outperform people that have been doing their job for a long time, because those people, for whatever reason, have stopped asking questions. They're the expert, and they're comfortable with their expertise. Meanwhile, there's all sorts of new knowledge and new technology. And so if you always are hungry, like a rookie is, to learn from others, then you'll keep innovating.
So as we wrap up, Brad, can you give us a takeaway for the audience?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. I suppose, you know, wearing my Michael Crouch Innovation Center hat, the takeaway would be that what we are trying to build is a center and a hub that's enabled by our university, UNSW, but it's really powered by the community. So we're not limiting our definition of community to people who are somehow employed by or alumni of UNSW. Obviously, that's our core community, but really we want to engage with industry, government, we want to engage with other academic institutions, and we want to do that in an open manner, and we want to do it globally. So, we're serious about working with the other universities in Australia, but also throughout the Asia-Pacific region, and in North America and in Europe. And the proof is in the pudding. We're working through a number of alliances to really strategically collaborate across multiple disciplines. And I guess what our value add is, UNSW has always had, as part of our motto, kind of a hand and mind type of approach, which is similar to the MIT approach. And so what we like to say is we're building a community of people who like to get their hands dirty and have a mindset to find a better way. And if that appeals to you, give us a call. We'd like to work with you.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. Our guest today has been Brad Ferber of the Innovation Center of New South Wales. And we've been learning how innovation is finding a better way. We value your opinion. If you're listening to us through iTunes, you can easily hit the subscribe button, leave a review, make a comment, all of which are very appreciated. We want to know what you want to know, what topics, people, issues are of interest to you. Just email us, podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, you can hear more of our podcast on the website, amcham.com.au. This is AmCham, bringing business to you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. This podcast is supported by VML. VML is a full-service digital marketing agency that can take you where you want to go. Everything we are is in everything we do. This is AmCham, bringing business to you.